it's so great to talk to you. We speak the same language.
Oh, you know, the same, that's cool.
We know the same people, and they're most of them are mice and ducks.
those are the best people to know.
Yes.
Birds of a feather.
Yeah. It's it's remarkable when the way that I've worked, I've written a couple of animated direct-to-video movies, and the it's a complete opposite of the Disney way, and I don't think I would have fit in over there if Maleficent had worked out, even if it had worked out, because the way I've always worked is, like, we break, like on a Batman or a Superman thing, we break a story, which usually takes, like, a week.
Yeah,
where we sit and we're in the conference room, or I'll come in with some ideas. Then I'll go away, and 2 weeks later, I'll have an outline. And then I'll go away for about 6 weeks, and I'll write a script. Yeah. And then they shoot the script.
Yeah.
And that's and that works for the kind of things that we do. I don't know if it would. And there are times I've wondered, would that work over there? I mean, Bill Pete seemed to make it work because he seemed to be in sync, at least with Sword in the Stone and with Dalmatians on what Walt wanted.
Yeah, yeah. You know, up to the new management coming in, we were pretty much, story development was all done at the storyboard.
Sure.
And although we did have scripts on occasion, the scripts were generally a guide.
Yeah, are they full scripts, or are they just more like treatments?
On occasion, it was a combination of all three.
Uh-huh.
On occasion, we would have full scripts. Usually we had outlines, and sometimes just like notes, you know.
Yeah, I don't
know.
Yeah.
But a lot of the story development was done on the storyboard.
Uh-huh.
Well, when Jeffrey and Michael came in, they said, "No, we need full scripts because we don't understand this storyboard thing."
Mm.
And so that's when they began to really focus on every feature film would have a full script because Michael could read it and understand it, and Jeffrey could read it and understand it, Initially, I balked against that because I had learned with Walt Disney. I mean, Walt was my mentor.
Sure.
And Walt did everything on the storyboard.
Right.
We didn't have a script for any of those Disney films.
No.
Unless a script was sort of transcribed later based on the storyboards. So it took me a while to make the adjustment. I remember when I got a script on Mulan, and it was written by Linda Wolverton wrote the script. And I think Linda also wrote a script for Beauty and the Beast.
Right.
That some say they use and some say they didn't use. And I don't know how much they use and how much they did. Because I didn't work on Beauty and the Beast. The first project I came on where Linda was involved was on Mulan.
Right.
And we started out working from a full script. Eventually that full script was tossed out. And we started from scratch. On the board, and we had to basically rewrite the picture on the storyboard, and went through many iterations, as all these films, do anyway. So,
well, that's my one experience working over there. I knew that whatever I was handing in on day one, if I stayed with the project, was not going to be the same whatever got on screen. That this is the start of a long scramble up a mountain, and there are many paths to the top.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Sometimes
yeah.
there's a landslide.
And sometimes, I think the landslide's guaranteed.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I was landslided off very quickly. So.
I think the problem our big features have, honestly, from an old story guy like myself, I think the big problem we have on feature films today is we have too much time and too much money. I know that sounds.
I would agree.
I know that sounds wrong, but yeah.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
It sounds perfectly reasonable to me because it's like too many cooks in the kitchen, too many expectations at the table.
Well, I've noticed that, like, if you don't mind me saying so about some of these things, it's like I've noticed that when I heard that sometimes it would take 4 years to get a script through story.
Yeah.
I mean, a picture through story. I always go, that's way too long.
You know,
it's a lot quicker when I write the feature stuff that I've done, mainly because it's on a deadline. It has to be out this December. The guys are ready for story pages.
And usually
let's go.
Because you're on a budget crunch for the shows that you're on. Yeah.
So it kind of puts a fire to get it done.
Yeah.
Then I've noticed some of the movies. There's sort of one of the movies that I really remember waiting for when I wasn't a kid. I was a teenager, but I was still in animation. And I think I mentioned this to you before we started, was I'd written to Ward Kimball about upcoming Disney movies, and he told me a little bit about Robin Hood.
Sure.
So I was really looking forward to that because it looked like fun, animals doing the Robin Hood story. And I remember when I saw it, I was disappointed with it because so little of it actually dealt with Robin Hood.
Yeah.
And he was not a very vibrant character. All his moments came when he was disguised as a stork or a fortune teller or somebody else. But as the foxy Robin Hood character, there's very little of him in the movie.
He's kind of beige.
Yeah. And, and I could see in that, even as a kid, I would watch sequences in that movie. Like there's, you go from Robin Hood doing something, from being kind to a little kid rabbit, and then suddenly the little kid rabbit is in the story, and there's sequence after sequence of him playing around and skipping around and little critters and everything. And by the time that scene ends, and it just sort of peters out, I'm wondering, where am I in the movie again? What's Robin Hood doing? Why is the lion a bad guy? And being really disappointed because I wanted to see Disney animation. I wanted to see swordplay. I wanted to see Robin Hood, fighting the Sheriff of Nottingham and everything like that. And it being kind of cool and as dramatic as I remembered Baloo fighting Shere Khan with the lightning and the fire and him slashing at him.
Yeah.
As a kid, I was going like, oh, this is scary, but it's really cool.
Right.
And then, it just seemed to me that was a movie that was sort of like storyboarded here and there. They had worked out a sequence and they didn't know where to go with it. And there was they really needed like a Walt or somebody to come in and say, chop this, cut this, move this around.
Oh, yeah. You really miss Walt Disney on that film because I was aware of the problems. Even as I worked on the film back in 1971, 72. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was just an awful Disney movie. And some kids have told me they actually enjoyed the film. And that I'm glad they enjoyed it, but I thought it was a
pretty... There are moments.
Yeah, there are moments, but overall it's a pretty poor film.
Uh-huh.
And I did some bits of animation. And I was happy to animate on it a little bit. But overall, as a film, it's very disappointing.
It seems to me like in watching that movie, like they had gone back to certain tropes that had worked before in other movies.
Yeah.
Like Mr. Smee and Captain Hook are... fun duo. So you take the snake and the lion and put them together. There's a little bit of the same dynamic.
Sure, sure.
But a rock'em sock'em hero in the form of Robin Hood was a character they really didn't seem like they could grapple with.
They missed a superhero opportunity.
Even a few years later when they did The Great Mouse Detective,
mm-hmm.
Basil's still a hero. He's funny, he's knockabout, he's a bit arrogant, and he takes his lumps. But he's a hero. He fights the evil rat and...
Yeah, that's the film that showed me that Disney could still do it.
Yeah,
I had been out of animation for a while. I actually left animation because I was working over in the comic book department.
Uh-huh.
And Bernie Mattinson was the producer. Bernie was an old friend of mine.
He's really good. He's
and Ron Clements, John Musker, and Dave Michener directed. And I hadn't seen anything on Great Mouse Detective.
Mm-hmm.
And they finished it, and they ran the film at the studio. We had a premiere of sorts on the studio lot. And I saw the movie, and I really enjoyed it. And what it made me realize was, these guys still have it.
Yeah.
They can still make good movies. And I remember telling Bernie after the screening, I think it's a darn good film.
Yeah.
It didn't do much box office because Disney didn't really promote it. Uh-huh. But it showed that Disney had the capacity to tell great stories and make good films again.
We saw Frozen recently. Misty, you saw it twice, actually.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it. And I thought that the sister dynamic was really good. And there actually came a moment where they're going to the ice, the Snow Queen's castle.
Yeah.
And she's out with the woodsman and the more idealistic princess or starry-eyed princess. And they have this very interesting relationship. And I'm really into these characters as the lead. And I'm okay with them being the leads. And then the little snowman wanders in.
Right.
And he has this moment. And I was thinking, like, he's a nicely designed character. He's funny. He's got a cute voice. He's great. But I kind of don't need to see the snowman right now because they've gotten to a point where the leads are actually just as captivating. They're just as funny.
Right.
And... I don't know if you have the same feeling, but I was actually feeling like I could actually see human beings carrying more of a movie and less a reliance on the sidekicks.
Yeah. Well, initially I was sort of dead set against the snowman until I found out that, well, darn it, he's kind of working for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I wasn't on board with it right away, but he grew on me, and I said, okay, I'm gonna go with the snowman.
Well,
he's working.
Did you work on Frozen?
No, I did not.
Oh, okay.
No, I haven't worked on an animated film since Monsters Incorporated.
Okay, that was your last one.
That's been years ago. That's like a decade ago.
Wow.
Oh, heavens. Yeah.
Although I've done other feature work at other studios besides Disney.
Okay.
So I worked on my share of bad movies even after I left Disney. But
thumbs up.
But again, I'm happy to work on a bad movie.
Yeah.
Any day. If anybody has a bad movie, give me a call. I'm all yours. So. No, I just enjoy being busy.
Sure, mm-hmm.
I'll work on anything, but I mean I'm really pleased with what Disney's doing,
mm-hmm.
and I was able to speak with the co-director and writer of Frozen last week, and I told her that I had seen her film a second time,
mm-hmm.
and I liked it better the second time, and I didn't think that was going to happen,
mm-hmm.
but I was watching the film and I said, this is really good.
Yep. That's what I said.
He asked me,
because I'm usually Captain Poo-Poo when it comes to that
stuff. Yeah,
because a lot of it feels by design, paint by numbers.
And it's tough because when you make a film like these things are epic in proportion. Because it takes so many people to do it, and it takes so long to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing they ever get done at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what the world of technology has brought us. I think instead of simplifying the process, it's made it far more complex.
And look at these standards. You know, people are talking about the uncanny valley and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you look and every single hair on her head is rendered.
Yeah.
You know, but there's no soul in her eyes. Not yet, but they'll get there. You know, it's crazy.
But the stuff is looking better, you know.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
With each film, when I was watching Frozen, and I'm looking at these images on screen, initially I disliked them because they're not hand drawn, so I don't want to like this movie
because
it's not hand drawn. So I'm already prejudiced. Like, well, I'm watching another CG movie. God, I hate CG. And then I watch it and I said, gee, it looks kind of doesn't look bad.
Oh, the castle construction
looks kind of good. Looks I really shouldn't like this, but it really looks nice.
There's that scene where she's running. Elsa is running across the ice, and it forms as she runs.
Yeah,
and her cloak and her hair is flowing behind her. Yeah.
Castle construction. I thought one of the things that I thought was it was so beautiful because it was such a nice melding of almost like the Pink Elephants on Parade color scheme.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, like that old, not old, but the iconic 1950s Fantasia type animation. The bright colors on black, and it's just so beautiful.
Sure.
And that coupled with the very last moment of that epic song, you know, when she goes, the snow never bothered me anyway.
Oh, yeah,
and just the look in her face, they did such a good job of capturing
the attitude.
Whoever did the attitude, and if the artists just did that from scratch and didn't take a human template for that, it was just lovely. It's really moving, and you really connect to that character, and it's like, okay.
You bet.
Because, like I said, I'm Captain Poo-Poo on the 3D.
Yeah. Yeah, when it's not working, I know it when it's not working. And when I watch that song the second time, and when she does that number, and of course she belts it out.
Oh,
and
it's beautiful.
When she does that last line, Cole never bothered me anyhow, bam. Mm.
You
just want to say,
yeah,
that's it.
Thumbs up. Yeah.
Nailed it. Nailed it. You did it.
Done.
Yeah.
It was just yes. That was my favorite sequence, just because the colors and the blossoming and the power and the it was just lovely. And
when
I told
him,
I said, that's her defying gravity moment.
Yeah.
You know, they hired Elphaba to do Wicked again, and here's her defying gravity moment.
And he said,
yeah, they kind of did that. Yeah. And I said, yeah. You know, but it works.
Yeah.
Just like defying gravity works. You know,
bet.
Like on stage,
you
she's flying. Here, she's building a castle, and it's just gorgeous.
Well, that's another way these movies have kind of come ahead, is that the leads are now the more captivating of the characters. If you look at a movie like Cinderella, Cinderella's a classic.
I like
and everything.
Gus.
Well, that's the thing, is that Cinderella is a girl in a bad situation, but she has to soldier through it the best she can. She can't really talk about it other to the animals,
mm-hmm.
and for her to talk to herself like, I'm unhappy, I'm miserable, I wish I could meet a prince, that would make her self-centered.
Yeah.
So it's better if the animals say, it's too bad about Cinderella, we wish we could help her, and they express what's going on in her heart.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Where now they're taking the movies and they're finding a way that the characters can express that themselves.
From within.
From within, mm-hmm. whether it's through song or story or design or everything. And I think it's a mark of how the movies have changed and yet remain the same because they're still captivating, fun family adventures.
So, Flynn, can we get back to you for a couple seconds here? And because I never asked these fan questions.
Okay. And now, back to Floyd.
Yes. Some of them are fan letters, which I will read to you. Okay. But there's two of them that I'd like to ask. Let's see. We'll start with... And now, we have already touched on Song of the South, but there's a question here for you about it. So I'm going to read Cole Rothacker's little mini letter to questions. And there's several questions buried in here, some of which you've already answered, but some of which you have not. Hello, Floyd, says Cole. This is a subject I know you've probably spoken, written about at length, but I'd just love to hear your thoughts on the controversy that has always hung around Disney's Song of the South. I know you contributed to a book about it, and I'm aware that, unlike the people at Disney, you don't feel it should be hidden away like it is, and you actually loved it as a kid, which we've already discussed.
Right.
Why do you think Disney's so afraid of it, which we've kind of already discussed? So that's the first one. How do you think kids today would react to it? Do you think it could serve as a form of education, or do you think it would play just as well today as a piece of entertainment? I'd love to hear more about it. I'd also just like to sincerely thank you for everything you've done for the world of animation. You are indeed not just a Disney legend, but an animation legend. Thank you, says Cole.
You've given me way, way too much credit.
I disagree.
Oh, gee. I mean, I'm another Disney employee who... you know, I'm another starry-eyed kid who showed up in the 1950s, and I think I'm just a survivor. I just outlived or outlasted most of my colleagues, you know, and we all worked hard. We all love this business, and I was just grateful for the opportunity and the experience. I just don't see myself as... You know, I'm not an innovator or pioneer. I didn't change Disney or do anything of the sort. I just worked there for a number of years, and it was a pleasure, you know, doing so. But, you know, good grief, I think of people who've made real contributions to the art of animation and to that company, and I just don't see myself in that category. But thanks for the compliment anyway. Mm-hmm. But regarding, to answer your question, Song of the South, Disney... avoids it because it's just sort of like it's a hot potato, and corporations naturally want to avoid controversy. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of why they would rather just put it on the shelf and ignore it, because they just, you know, why open that bag if you don't have to? I think it would play well today. I think it would be an educational experience for many. I don't have a problem with it. I never have. Mm-hmm. But I just know that corporations are just good at avoiding risk and controversy. And Disney's a big corporation, and they're not going to go there if they don't have to. Mm-hmm. So it's not surprising that they don't want to release the film. Heck, it would even make money for them. But they would be willing to forget the money because they figured it's going to be too much of a hassle, you know. And I think that's why they would rather just keep the film on the shelf than open that can of worms. And that's a shame, but, you know, that's the way it is.
And that's coming from someone who got to see a crisp 35mm print.
Yeah. It's all a right. great film.
It is.
It's
a remarkable film.
I've often wondered why Walt never did a series of shorts with the characters after that.
You know, I think he wanted to. And I think that was the plan initially, but he just never got around to it.
Huh?
You know, things got in the way. I like survival.
Like his death.
Oh, yeah. Paying the bills. That was during the war, yeah.
It was just, you know, paying the bills and keeping the company afloat, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking a little bit earlier, and I have the other question right here, but it's on something different. And so since you mentioned those wars, we were talking about a huge layoff sweep. You got to stay on during that, didn't you?
Well, there were many layoffs. I mean, matter of fact, layoffs were just part of the animation business. Of course, I was totally unaware of them, you know, until I got to the company.
So you get your first one.
You know, I was just a naive kid, so I didn't know that Disney had been having layoffs for years, because it's the nature of the business. Mm-hmm. The business expands, and contracts. Mm-hmm. As there's a need for more personnel, they hire more, and when a film is done, they tend to lay off the people they don't need. Mm-hmm. It's just economics. Sleeping Beauty, we had a massive layoff after Sleeping Beauty. Half the staff lost their jobs.
Wow.
Thankfully, they found work, you know, in other areas like television. But at the time, that was devastating. And then after 101 Dalmatians in 1960, another massive layoff, and we lost another half of the staff. And so this was traumatic, but it was also, it wasn't done out of malice. It was mm-hmm. done out of economic necessity. And I think a lot of people have to realize that. They'll look at Disney, oh, big bad Disney. They don't care. All they care about is money. But sometimes you have to do what you got to do to stay afloat. Mm-hmm. And I understood it even then when I saw animators losing their jobs. Mm-hmm. This is what happens if you don't have any work. Mm-hmm. I mean, a company can't employ people to sit at their desk doing nothing.
Right.
Even though they've done that. Yeah. Even though they have done that on occasion. Mm-hmm. But that's just simply called bad management. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're in that predicament, you know, you're paying people a salary to do nothing. Mm-hmm. I've been one of the people paid a salary to do nothing on occasion.
Oh, how nice.
And thankful for it. But I still looked at that as, you know, that's not really smart management.
Yeah.
Since you're paying me to sit here and answer email and go to the beach.
But can I pop in with another quick question?
Yeah.
can I pop in with a fast one?
Sure can.
I'm just wondering, this is something I've always kind of wondered about Walt, and maybe you know something about this. Did he ever talk about other cartoon producers' work? Did he ever say, like, I was at the movies and I saw a Bugs Bunny cartoon last night that was really good? Was he even aware of other studios and what they were doing and their characters?
Oh, I'm sure he was aware. But,
he's aware of Batman.
He was aware of Batman, that's for sure. No, it's really funny. You know, he never... Keep in mind, I was not a best buddy of Walt Disney. No. And he was a much older gentleman. So the stuff he said, you know, privately or with his buddies or over a drink...
Right.
You know, I mean, keep in mind, I was only with Walt in meetings where it was strictly business.
Sure.
So there was no chit-chat, there was no small talk. Mm. I'm sure he did all that, but certainly not with a bunch of, you know, kids like me who, you know, could easily have been his grandchildren. You know, we were just kids. So
the main reason I was asking is when I worked for Lucas and Spielberg, we'd be in a meeting and we'd say, hey, remember in Duck Dodgers where the Martian ship comes down and does. And Steven would, you know, like would reference things or George would talk about, you know, certain cartoons that he liked. And I was just wondering if that same thing ever...
Yeah, well, those guys are cartoon geeks, so mm-hmm. they would know that stuff. I don't know. It's really funny. Walt never struck me as that geeky.
No.
I mean, he loved his cartoons, but mainly he loved Disney cartoons.
Yeah.
And he really didn't, you know, I don't think he was that fond of anybody else's work.
I wouldn't imagine that he was.
He was kind of a literary geek, wasn't he? Kind of a booky, like a reader. Like, he would scour for story.
Oh, yeah, but I think when Walt was reading, he was always looking for his next movie.
Fair enough.
So maybe he wasn't all that literate as just a producer searching for, you know, material.
Is this a good property? I don't know. Yeah. Page 20, I'm bored.
He was
next.
More of a train geek and more like a builder.
Yeah,
type
yeah
thing.
He loved that kind of stuff.
Models
yeah.
and things.
Yeah. Like okay, so back to Floyd. Off of Walt and back to Floyd. Because Floyd is fascinating to me. So, and I'm going to actually ask you this next one. And this, you know, you were saying, oh, you give me too much credit. Oh, is that so? Because I would say Disney disagrees as you are a recipient of a Legend Award. And that's what this next question is about.
Yeah, but so is Regis Philbin.
Yeah, well, I'm never done talking about him. No. Hi, Floyd.
Sorry, Regis.
Huge fan. Off of Regis, back to Floyd.
It's not Regis, is it?
Okay. It's Regis.
It is, actually. This question is from Regis. No,
okay.
I'm kidding.
That's
no.
right.
Good. No, it's from a guy named Alice Acarina. Acarino.
Okay.
Alex, not Alice. Alex Acarino asks, hi, Floyd. Huge fan. And you got a smiley face. And he says, what was it like to become a Disney legend and receive that award? What was running through your mind at the time? And how did you know you were going to receive it? Does Disney send a horse-drawn pumpkin to hand deliver the good news? Thanks, Alex.
Oh, dear. Well, you know, I got a letter in the mail from, it was Saturday morning, and I got a letter in the mail, and it said on the envelope, from the Walt Disney Company. And so, of course, the first thought is, what trouble am I in now? And especially when you read it's from the office of the CEO, Robert Iger. Uh-oh. Oh, man, who did I kill at the studio? What's going on now?
Somebody's mad.
So, yeah, so you open the letter, you know, trembling, like, you know, what happens now? And then I read with amazement that they wanted me to be a Disney legend. And it's like kind of weird because it's like, you know, what? Me? Oh, they must have gotten the wrong. They must have gotten the wrong address.
I don't think so.
They pulled the wrong name out of the hat.
I don't think they did.
the one cool thing when we did the legend ceremony.
What is it for people who don't know? Please tell them all about
the
it.
The Disney legend. I think it started out. I don't know how many years ago, but they said, "Let's honor the special people at Disney."
Mid-80s?
Okay, yeah. So you know the stuff better than I do. and at that time, they would do it out in front of the studio theater.
Oh.
Because they wanted to do it kind of like, hey, let's have our own Grauman's Chinese Theater.
Sure.
We got a theater, you know, and we got an outside where you walk in. Let's put handprints at the outside of our theater.
That's cute.
It'll be kind of like a Disney Grauman's Chinese. Cool idea. And so initially, I think they put up the names of like the nine old men, Fred McMurray, you know, guys like that who mm-hmm. were kind of Disney. I saw them as iconic Disney.
Mm-hmm.
So they would choose these iconic Disney actors, mm-hmm. songwriters, artists, and it was kind of cool. And they would do this, and I guess they were doing it annually. I don't even remember. But it was kind of cool, and I remember going to the lot every time they would have a ceremony because I just wanted to see my heroes as they were given this award. And I remember going there because Carl Barks was made a Disney legend. And I said, whoa, if anybody deserves it, it's
Absolutely.
Carl Barks.
Absolutely. It's in the bedroom.
Yeah. Sterling Holloway was made a Disney legend. And Sterling had done so many voices for mm-hmm. Disney. Clearly, this is a guy who should be a Disney legend. And so we did this every year. And I always thought, this is a really cool idea that these great old guys, and back at that time, they were always old, you know, really old people, you know. And it was a really cool thing. Well, keep in mind, I had no idea that I would ever be on that list. And maybe that kind of weirds me out because I don't think of myself as being in the company of these legendary figures because to me, they truly are legends. I mean, a lot of the names are the kids who made the guys who made the movies I saw as a child.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a little kid, these guys made the movies I watched. So to me, they were true Disney legends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, truly Disney legends. Guys like Bill Pete, who had been at the studio since the 1930s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, guys like that. And so.
But you span an important period of Disney history going from the 50s to the 90s. And I
managed to survive a number of decades.
But there were very few people coming in that were new at that point and who made the, you know, you've gone all the way from Sleeping Beauty to Monsters, Inc.
I was lucky. I was really lucky to make it through all those years. I was lucky not to be laid. I could have easily been laid off
mm-hmm.
any number of times, and I survived those layoffs. I could have stayed in animation and been a lousy animator and got booted out of there. but I made the move to story and lived to create another day.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think I've been very lucky, very fortunate in my career to just have good things happen to me.
Well, you also have a lot of gratitude. And I think
I've got a lot to be thankful for, so, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then to work with so many cool people. I mean, just to be able to meet people like I've met throughout my career, I mean, it's like a who's who of people I've admired and respected. And so many of them I've met at Disney, at the Disney studio. I mean, everybody from, you know, like I said, the names are just like Gregory Peck.
Yeah.
And Edgar Bergen, Ed Wynn.
And recently, Tom Hanks, you were talking about.
Tom Hanks.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about Saving Mr. Banks yet.
Yeah, and it's just been just this wild ride of getting to know these amazing people. Dick Van Dyke, Julie Andrews.
Wow.
You know, I mean, where else can you meet and work with that kind of talent? It's just a real cool thing to be able to have that opportunity. You know, because not everybody has it. Mm-hmm. And so I've been very fortunate in my career, mm-hmm. you know.
So we haven't talked about Saving Mr. Banks yet. You were very actively involved in the development and the production of that film. What did you do?
Actively involved, hardly. What happened? They were shooting. Well, I was aware of the film. I knew the film was in production because I was delighted when I found that Disney was going to finally do this wonderful film because. A great screenplay by Kelly Marcel, mm-hmm. and so grateful that the script found its way to Disney and to Alan Horn, who then convinced Tom Hanks to play Walt Disney, and then to have the script blessed by Diane Disney Miller, and to have it go into production. Well, last December, and this was December of last year, I got a call from the Disney studio. I remember I was in my office, my corner office, way in the back of Disney Publishing. And I got a call from the main Disney lot and said, can you get over here? And I said, yeah, why? He says, well, Mr. Hanks wants to see you.
Oh.
Mr. Hanks? You mean Tom Hanks? Yeah, you know, they're shooting on the Disney lot. Can you get over here in the next, you know, 20 minutes or so? I said, yeah, sure, yeah, you bet. So I'm headed out the door and my wife said, where are you going? And I said, no, I got to do a thing, and I'll be back. I'm going to see Tom Hanks. And she says, I'm coming too. And I said, Tom Hanks didn't ask for you. He said he wanted to see me. And, of course, my wife says, no, I'm coming too.
Yeah, he didn't ask for me, but he needs me.
He needs me.
He doesn't know it yet, but I'll be there.
I go over to the Disney lot, and I'm just assuming they're shooting on one of the sound stages, and I pull up to the guard at the gate, and I said, what stage is Mr. Hanks on? Tom Hanks, because he's doing the movie here. What stage is he on? Oh, the guard said, no, he's not on any of the stages. They're shooting out in front of the animation building. Just go over to animation, and you'll see the crew out front. So, okay, cool. So I go over there, and naturally, you know what a movie set looks like. You see all of the people hanging around, and
the
you
truck
see
open with all the junk
truck
in it,
and the stuff, and
cones,
the
and
lights, and mm-hmm. cameras,
lawn
and stuff,
chairs.
And loads of people walking around, and mm-hmm. I don't see anybody. I certainly don't see Tom Hanks. So, I was aware that Tom had a personal assistant, Suki Raphael, and so I thought, well, I'll just look for Suki. But then I realized, oh my gosh, I don't even know what Suki looks like. We've only communicated by phone or by email. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what she even looks like.
Uh-huh.
So I started, well, I'll just start going among the crew. Mm-hmm. Anybody here know Suki? You know,
we're
hey,
Suki.
You got best boy. Uh-huh. You know Suki? Anyway, so somebody said, oh, Suki, yeah, she's over here, or she's in the building, and I said, would you please tell her that. Floyd is here, that, you know, you can tell Mr. Hanks that Floyd is here. So I'm kind of hanging out on the set because people are milling around. And all of a sudden, I hear this shouting, and I'm thinking, what the heck's going on? And I hear somebody shouting, where is he? Where is he? Where's that Disney legend? And I look, and it's Tom Hanks. He's running toward me. And I was so surreal because shouldn't this be the other way around? Shouldn't I be running toward Tom Hanks? And Tom Hanks is running toward me. So he was just, so that was our introduction. It was just so bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom rushes up and he's shaking my hand. And then the film's director, John Lee Hancock, has his camera and he's taking pictures of me. And I'm like, why is the director taking pictures of me?
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to figure, this is bizarre. I should be taking pictures of him. I'm the fanboy. I'm the geek. I'm the fan of John Lee. He directed Blindside, and I want to get his picture, and mm-hmm. he's photographing me. So everything was reversed that day, you know, and it was just really weird and bizarre. But then it all settled down, and Tom and I started talking. Once I kind of got used to him as just, hey, Tom, regular guy, regular mm-hmm. cool dude, mm-hmm. no big deal, no movie star, we're just having a chat here. And so we just started talking about Walt and about Mary Poppins and doing the movie and where, you know, I said, well, it was in that office right up there, you know, on the third floor of the animation building. That's where Don DeGrotti had his office, and the meetings with P.L. Travers was up there, and all the stuff went down in that area. And Tom was just kind of fascinated getting all this Disney history from a guy who was around back in 1961. Mm-hmm. So we had a cool time. It was a nice conversation, and took a few pictures. He was gracious enough to pose while my wife snapped a few photographs.
And, see, he did need her.
Yeah, he did. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Personal
yeah,
photographer.
Yeah.
You needed her.
It turns out that they shared something in common. They shared they were born the same year.
Oh, fun. Uh-huh.
Which Tom called a banner year.
Indeed, he was correct.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, at
1956.
Home.
Apparently, my wife and Tom Hanks were born in 1956, which kind of annoyed me because they're both so young.
Now, for those of you who don't know, at home, Floyd's
yeah,
wife.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
and I'm right over the hill.
Up in the Bay Area. Yeah. That's very true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Tom and I are from pretty much the same. He's a couple years older than I am. But, yeah. Orinda, and he's Oakland, just yeah. on the other side of the tunnel.
That's
now,
right.
For those of you, I've been trying to say this three times, but for those of you at home who don't know, Floyd's wife is stunningly beautiful. She is gorgeous. She's always dressed to the nines. Quite frequently is wearing a hat. She's just gorgeous, and she's gracious, and she's kind. She's a wonderful conversationalist.
I'm wearing this hat because she put this hat on my head.
That's a great hat.
She's and very fashionable. Every time I see you guys at a con.
Yes.
Yeah, every time you guys are at a Comic Con or whatever, she is so together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, she just seems like she would be a consummate hostess, and she's just cool.
And to think that we met at Disney.
Stop it.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that real fairy tale
You're
stuff?
Really dipping back at the well a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
So
you know,
a lot of time
it's,
at the same
it's,
fountain
it's
there,
strange.
My friend.
It's very bizarre.
How did you meet her?
I was beginning to have my back thing. I remember I was in pain, and I had taken some days off because I was still dealing with this back pain. I was falling apart in those days.
And now you're
Robo Floyd now. But one of our art directors, he had brought in this freelancer to work on a series of Disney books, and he didn't have any place to put her, so he put Adrian in my office since I was out sick, and hadn't been at work in a number of days. Probably thought I was never coming back. He's dead.
Oh God.
Anyway, they put Adrian in my office, and so we had never met. So I came in one day unexpectedly, and I saw this woman sitting at my desk in my office. And my first reaction was, who the hell are you?
Uh-huh, I should say.
Yeah, yeah.
Get out of here.
And she said, oh, gosh, I'm sorry that Gary told me I could use your office. And I said, oh, I felt bad. I said, no, just stay. It's cool. Uh-huh. Just stay there. I can work in the corner at this little table.
Oh.
And so that's what I did.
And that began the precedent.
That's how it
started. You prepped for marriage from that moment on.
Yeah, yeah.
Losing the negotiation and accommodating her whim.
Exactly.
Because that's what it's all about, right, Deanie?
I was already...
Yes.
I was already...
what you said. Yeah. I'm sorry, Floyd, I didn't hear you.
No, I'm just saying, yeah, game over, man.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. That's what happens.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
My favorite line in a movie, Game Over, is that's Bill Paxton in the James Cameron's Alien.
Oh yeah.
And the wild thing about that while watching Mr. Banks at the Walt Disney Studio Theater, sitting behind me, I kid you not, Bill Paxton.
Stop wow. it.
I turn around and Bill Paxton. Game over, man.
Did
game
you say
over.
That to him?
Yeah, of course I had to. I had to be the geeky fanboy.
And he loved it, didn't he?
I had to go over all of his movies. Hey, yeah. Remember True Lies?
He's like, no. And
Weird Science.
Twister. Yeah, we got it. Weird Science.
Chet.
Weird Science.
Chet the
and,
turd.
And, of course, we can't forget Titanic.
Yeah.
Oh,
Titanic,
yeah.
You know. This is Rose, my new best friend.
And I know the difference between you and Bill Pullman.
That's right.
That's Well, that's half
people.
Of it right
people
there.
Get Bill Paxton and Bill Pullman confused, but you know it's the hair. Well, hey, let's talk about Bill Paxton. This is so Disney related. Sort of, hey, no. Actually, it is Disney related because Bill Paxton is directing something at Disney. He's directing now.
Oh.
So that explains why he was on the Disney studio lot, and also because I got a chance to be geeky fanboy, because I really love Bill Paxton, and he's never been a huge star, but boy, he's been a star for me. You know, I love his movies, and that bit in True Lies was just priceless. Where he plays, what was the character's name? The spy, the phony, fake spy guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with Jamie Lee Curtis, and he was just great in that role.
Yeah.
So, can we talk about your book?
My book. Well, please. The book is just words and pictures. Yeah.
Way to sell it, Floyd.
That's good.
Yeah, Where can they buy it? Tell them what it is. Tell them what your inspiration was. What's your process? All of it, please.
No, the book's title is Animated Life.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think my publisher chose because it starts with the letter A.
Okay, perfect. So you're up high on the list.
Alphabetical order, you know,
yes.
It makes sense.
Uh-huh.
A. Hmm.
Let's spell animated with two A's.
With two A's, yeah, let's make it.
I've got a friend, really? Aaron Raddatz, and it's, I mean, well, I shouldn't say it because I can't speak for him, but I always thought, you clever, clever man.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to be top on every list.
That's right. Yeah. That's how you do it.
It's about art books.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That's right. No,
animated
no.
Life.
I wrote my book because it was simply a way of sharing my experience at Disney.
Uh-huh.
Again, I didn't want to write a biography because my life is not interesting.
Oh my gosh, his life is not interesting.
What?
But
yeah, okay.
No, there's no scandal.
We're just gonna throw these podcasts in the
No, trash. There's no scandal. There's no drug use. There's no.
There doesn't have to be those things for it to be fascinating.
It's boring.
It's not boring.
Yeah, it's a boring life. But anyway, I wanted to write about my experience at Disney because it was such a cool place, you know, to come and work. Mm-hmm. And I really started the book with, you know, back in 1956, I walked onto the Disney studio lot, you know, and my life changed.
Mm-hmm.
It really did. I mean, I walked into Disney one Monday morning, and it was like a new world, you know. Everything started at that point, you know. Fade in, you know, chapter one, scene one, or whatever.
Exterior.
Walt Disney Animation Building. Yeah. And so I just wanted to share that experience. And my publisher, and boy, was I lucky to get a publisher, because I thought I could never sell this book anyway. I thought I'd write a book and then nobody would want it. So what I had done, I had written a few chapters, and I pitched it to the publisher, and they said, yeah, we'd like to publish this, mm-hmm. but it's got to be a much longer book because it's you don't have enough material here. So I said, yeah, hey, it's okay. I can write more. So what I did, I found an empty office at Disney. This is how you do it. I didn't work there. I wasn't employed there. I had already retired, so I was gone. I was out of there.
Just some random hobo hiding around.
Yeah, I
did.
I came back to Disney and I found an empty office and I moved in.
That makes me really happy.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
It's very clever.
Spielberg story. Universally.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like that. It's kind of like that, like what Steven did at Universal. So I just went back to Disney because I found out I couldn't write at home because I said, I'm writing a Disney thing and I gotta get that Disney vibe. So I got to go back to Disney. And I sat in that office for a year and completed the rest of the book and turned it in.
Nice.
And delivered it on time too because the publisher, my editorial director wanted the manuscript delivered in December of 2011? I guess it's, yeah. Because it spent all of 2012 at over Disney Legal.
Yeah, that's what you were saying before
that's
we started.
Right. So you saw
a year.
I delivered it. I delivered the manuscript with all the artwork, with all the photographs, everything, December of 2011. Wow, my job is done. It's done. I did it. I've completed a book. Fantastic. What I didn't realize, no, I hadn't really completed the book. I was going to spend the next year doing the dance with Disney lawyers.
Revisions.
Mm-hmm. And changing an adjective here.
Yes.
And an article there.
Photograph here. Uh-huh. Photograph there. Little drawing here, little drawing there. A word here, a word there. And but you know, you got to play nice.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned this from many years in the movie biz. You got to learn how to compromise, a little give and take. And you, so, you know.
Do you think they'll ever make a credible biography of Walt's story? I mean, maybe not Warts and all, but we should, Mr. Banks wasn't bad. Yeah. I mean, they cleaned up some things, but something that shows maybe the strike, some of the contention here and there.
I would love that. Struggles, I think a lot of people would. I think maybe saving Mr. Banks breaks the ice.
Yeah.
And might enable us to see more of Walt Disney. I know the Disney I would like to see. I would love to see young Walt Disney.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, at the Hyperion Studio over in Silver Lake. That's a movie I'd like to see.
You know, one of the things that I really... we started talking hours ago about the Disney Family Museum.
Yeah.
Was that I... Because I think the family put the museum together... They were a lot, they had a more objective view of everything. So
yeah.
There was credit given to Art Babbitt, even though Walt had problems with art.
Oh, you
and
bet.
With the unionization and everything like that. And they covered the strike. I mean, they didn't dwell on it, but they certainly.
They did deal with it. Yeah,
they did.
Yeah, which was great that they were willing to do that and to tell the complete story. Diane didn't want to whitewash.
Yeah,
of her father. She wanted to tell the whole story.
Yeah, I think that's important.
She sounds pretty solid.
Yeah, she was. She
just passed away.
I know she just recently passed. Yeah, just
recently.
A couple weeks ago. I'm sorry.
Yeah, she was a good friend.
Mm. I'm sorry for your loss.
I'm sorry
for everybody's loss. She sounds really special.
Yeah, it's you know, life happens. You know, it's just one of those things. A tragic accident, because she was in perfect health. I mean, it was just an accident.
And she fell, didn't she?
She fell, fell and hit her head. So yeah, you know, sadly these things happen.
But it's nice that she chose to not censor the story.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that one. And tell that story the way that it, you know, like with an unbiased, largely unbiased.
And we talked about the motion picture too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We talked about Tom Hanks flew up to San Francisco and spent, I think he made two trips up there. But he spent time at the Walt Disney Museum and got to know the character he would play.
Was he her choice? Did she choose how to cast that film?
No, she did not. Okay. But Disney wanted her approval on the film and on the casting of the film.
Mm-hmm.
I think Alan Horn wanted to get Diane's blessing before, you know, making this film. He didn't want to do it. If Diane had been against it, the film probably wouldn't have gotten made.
Interesting.
Yeah, it probably wouldn't have gotten made. So a lot of things had to happen. And I'm so glad they did. I'm so glad that the film came to Disney at the right time when Alan Horn was the film boss. I'm so glad that he was wise enough to choose Tom Hanks. Some people disagree, but I think Tom Hanks was a great choice to play Walt Disney.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tom Hanks is playing Walt Disney. He's not doing a sketch on Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. You know, people said, oh, he doesn't look like Walt Disney, or he doesn't sound like Walt Disney. You know, like, well, he's not doing a sketch.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to portray a man.
Well, there's an essence that he's trying to.
Yeah, exactly. He's trying to capture.
And you feel like he got it.
And he got it. And when people tell me, well, I don't think he did, because, and I said, well, look, you guys watch Walt Disney on television in your living room. Guys like myself, Richard Sherman, we were in the room with Walt Disney.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were in the room with him. And I tell you, Tom got him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to me, that's end of story.
Mm-hmm. There's that great scene in the movie where Richard Sherman, in a lot of his concerts, talks about a scene similar to it.
Yeah.
And they didn't do it verbatim the way he does it, but
right.
They captured the essence of that scene of Walt sitting outside and hearing the music and going in.
That's right.
Lovely scene. My favorite of the movie.
Well, don't tell me, because I haven't seen it yet.
No, but we have it here. So.
Yeah, you got it.
We got the screener, much to your dismay. Floyd is also a member of the same guild.
I've got it, too. I've got the screener.
Well, you saw it.
I saw it. In August, I think. I saw it earlier this year.
With Bill Paxton. You mentioned that.
You know, but you know, when I saw it, I have to be, I'm going to have to confess what happened to me at that screening. It was practically, I didn't see with a full house. It was like almost an empty theater. You know how you go for a special screening?
Sure.
Because I wanted to see the film, and they said, well, we'll get you a screening. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of like sort of alone in this Disney theater. And it's really cool. I'm at the Disney studio in the Disney theater. I'm about to travel back to 1961, which is kind of amazing. And I'm already at the place where it all happened.
Wow.
At the Disney studio. And I sat and I watched the film, and I sat in that theater and I cried like a baby. I wept throughout the film. And I had no idea the film was going to touch me in that way. It was, I don't know, it just had a special resonance for me. Maybe because I knew those people.
Mm-hmm.
So many of them are gone now.
Mm-hmm.
So few of us are left. Julie Andrews, Dick Van Dyke, Richard Sherman, myself, and maybe a handful of others. But all of those animators, all of those actors, all of the people who made Mary Poppins are all gone now.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's what was part of the sadness, knowing what we created and what was left behind for millions of people to enjoy, you know, for decades to come. It was just very special. And to know, you know, where all this comes from, what Walt had to do to make it happen, the trials and turmoil they all had to go through to make that picture happen. And, you know, it was just very special. So, yeah, I indeed wept throughout saving Mr. Banks.
For many reasons.
But for me, it was probably a different experience than most people would have, you know.
How fascinating.
But I'm so happy they made it, and it's a film worth seeing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you get to walk around the set of the offices and stuff? Because you were saying they shot a lot of those office scenes, not in the office, but in a soundstage, right?
Yeah, they shot the interiors on a soundstage. The exteriors, naturally, were shot at the studio and at Disneyland, which is great because, like, oh, we had to build Disneyland to make a movie. No, well, fortunately, the park was already constructed, so we just had to go on location.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's cool. It's just that all of the exteriors were able to be, you know, shot on the Disney lot, and of course the scenes at the park. I know there's some historians were grumbling about the fact that the Disney front gate does not look the same today as it did back in 1961.
Hey, there's Pinocchio's daring journey over in the corner. That wasn't built in 1983.
That's right. But anyway, you know, we could have created the 1961 gate digitally. You know, it could have been done.
Mm-hmm.
Probably would have cost a fair amount of money to do it. But, you know, the present day gate works just fine.
Absolutely.
And those of us who know our history know the gate didn't look like that back in 19... but most people won't notice it. And so, as a producer, I would say, yeah, we could do that shot, but is it really worth the $100,000 it's going to take to shoot it?
Is it going to change the story?
And is it going to change the story? It's only one shot, and it's not going to change the story. No, we're going to use the same gate. Forget it. Yeah.
So Jerry Beck is unhappy.
Yeah, okay. Jerry's going to be unhappy, but, you know, I'm sorry, Jerry.
Sorry, Jerry. Just all in good fun.
But just think, we saved $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I think there's a lot of cool things. And I'm sure all the Disney buffs and all the Disney historians will be looking for little things to nitpick. Oh, you got that wrong and you got that wrong. But I think what's so amazing about Saving Mr. Banks is all the things it got right.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's what knocked me out, is watching the movie and looking at certain scenes and seeing drawings pinned up on the board that I saw in Don DeGrady's office in 1961.
Wow.
And they were in the movie. And it's like, wow, you know. Somebody was paying attention.
Yeah.
Somebody got it. Somebody got it right.
Yeah.
Where movies tend to get a lot of things wrong, they got so much right in this film. It's just an impressive work, you know. And I didn't make the movie, but I kind of feel like it's mine in a way.
I'm very
proud of it. You know?
You should be.
Yeah.
It's a piece of your life.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
It's John Lee Hancock's movie, so I give him credit for making a great film.
Wow.
Kelly Marcel's script. Good script.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't read many of those these days.
Mm-mm.
But yeah, it can happen.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So I'm pleased. I'm a happy man. And this December, boy, what a December for Disney. A great animated film and a great live-action film, mm-hmm. all in the same month.
And a great Mickey Mouse cartoon.
And a great Mickey Mouse cartoon.
Yeah, that's
how cool was that?
Yeah.
That's fun.
Man, oh man.
I love that. I absolutely love that.
Yeah. So if they combine all three and do Get a Frozen Mr. Banks?
There you go.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah, it's Oscar time.
Yeah.
I would love to see Mickey Mouse get the Oscar.
Oh, you know, man.
It's been a long time.
Just hear the exception speech.
I think Mickey has earned it.
Yeah.
And what a comeback for the mouse, you know.
Oh.
Yeah.
In after a big
being,
way.
After being in Palm Springs for the past 4 decades.
Mm-hmm. And how nice is it to see Horace Horsecollar back?
Yes, I know. I know. Yeah. And the fact that now that phone he had, was that an iPhone or an Android?
I don't know.
Can't say because it's got the long, narrow screen. Yeah, could have been a 5.
Yeah, you don't know.
They put him in a Captain America shirt also. There's a little corporate synergy.
I know. That's good stuff.
They won't let us do it on the Marvel shows. We're dying to, like, you know, have Spider-Man, Mickey Mouse team up, but they, you know, no, can't cross the streams. But I guess in this case, they could give a nod to some of the other, the other characters.
That's really cool. That's great.
Yeah, boy, it's just fabulous. There's some really good stuff going on over there. It's very exciting. Some of these little Mickey shorts that they're doing and the
The ones for TV, the Paul Rudish's ones. Those are really fun.
Yeah, the baguette one was real cute.
Maybe magic has returned to Disney.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice?
I don't think it ever truly goes away. I think it ebbs and flows. You know, it's
maybe
sometimes,
maybe that's it. Yeah.
Well, sometimes it falls in the hands of the wrong sorcerer.
Ooh, well, yeah.
There you go.
To the hands of the evil sorcerer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I think this is a good place to leave off, but knowing that we will return.
Floyd, can we please have you back?
Jack will be back in just a moment. But
well, I just wanted to say that I wanted to throw in here's a weird Walt story that you've probably never heard. My uncle Carter was a reporter for the Washington Star, and he was in South America when Walt was on the trip, and actually wound up talking to Walt in the bar at the hotel they stayed in Rio. And it just happened very naturally. He was there getting a drink, and there was another American. Oh, another American. How are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a reporter. What do you do? Oh, I'm pictures. You know, I'm down here on a tour. And it's like, oh, really? Anything I might have seen? If you've got kids. Well, I don't have kids. But then he hears, oh, Mr. Disney, oh, that's me, they want me. Well, it's nice talking to you. And he's sort of sitting there going like, A nice little moment. My Uncle Carter used to tell that story.
I thought you were going to tell the story of the guy who stuck with the bill.
What? Oh, no!
No. Do you know that story, Floyd?
No, I don't.
Okay, I don't know if it's true. We don't know someone firsthand, so I don't feel right. We'll tell you off camera, if you will, I guess. Because we don't know for sure that it's true. We've heard that it is, but...
No, Walt paid for his own drink, you know, when he...
Oh, he did?
At the bar, yeah. You
know, I thought he left the guy with the bill.
No, my uncle.
No. There he paid for his own drink.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the other story. Okay. And now we've sort of half told it, but we're going to let you guys at home wonder what we're talking about.
Yeah, well, that's a story for another day.
Yeah. So, but anyway, Floyd, what a delight. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us. And will you please come back?
I would be happy to. Yeah, this has been fun.
You are fascinating.
Yeah, it's like doing radio without without earphones.
Yes.
And will you bring your lovely wife next time?
Yeah, well, we'll see about that.
If she'll ever speak to us again after keeping him out all night.
No,
for all he knows, she knows we're off drinking or something.
She's not upset. She's probably asleep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, you know what? Sometimes he says that about me when he's out, and he's wrong.
Oh, when I'm doing Trader Vic's night or something like that?
Yeah, I'm usually not mad when you're doing Trader Vic's.
Misty's asleep, and then Flint goes, no, she's here.
She's here, and she's mad, Dean. Clear out! Yeah. No, I haven't come into a party and dragged you out by your hair in years.
No. You're a magician. You've got the crystal ball there. You know where I am every second of the day.
Yeah. Beep. Well, and if I don't, then I smell it when you come. You had a burrito. This poor man, he gets no inch And in any capacity, he comes home and I'm like, you just ate a taco. Yeah. How do you know I just ate a taco? And I'm like, I can
say. And no.
Oh, yeah. One time he came in and he had had a mint and he cleaned up his face. And I got in the car and smelled the burrito in the car. And I came in and said, you just had Mexican food.
That's right.
And he was like, are you kidding me? Does your wife do that too? Does she just sniff you out?
It's hard to disguise Mexican food.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah, Mexican and Indian food is tough to manage.
It's a tough one, yeah.
Yeah, you have done that when you've done it.
I know, and so, and she knows, she knows.
Well, but I'm like olfacta. Like, I don't ask you, like, what were Walt Disney's steps and stride? You know, like, when you would walk with him, was he charismatic? What did he smell like? I want to know. Olfacta. Like, I've always said, if that was a, you know, like, if I were going to be a superhero, I'd be sniffing stuff.
Well, that's important, though.
Because, it is.
Because
it
that
isn't.
Can tell you a lot.
Yeah, it kind of can.
Jim but Henson, oh.
If you were like, well,
yeah.
Body odor, we would all go, oh, body odor. All right.
Jim you Henson know? Smelled like sweat the day I met him.
Super.
That's because he was on set doing this.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
For 12 hours straight.
Yeah.
Yeah, he would have been exhausted.
And he had that hippie headband on that he used to wear.
Right.
And the guy was dripping.
Yes, mm-hmm. his hippie
and
headband.
Softener.
Yeah.
Yeah. But one of the nicest guys I ever met, and I got to go on a set of a Muppet special. And,
you told the story on the podcast before. You
but I'll tell Floyd quickly. Like I said, I was going. I'm not going to talk to him. I'm not going to talk to him. He's busy. He's like, yeah. I wouldn't know what to say. I went up, introduced myself, and he said, "Nice to meet you. Can you see? Okay, come over here and watch with us." So he leads me over to where Frank Oz and Jerry Nelson and Richard Hunt are watching, are doing the puppets, and I was his guest for the rest of the day. And I'm going like. What? Yeah.
There must be some mistake.
Yeah. Which is so funny and interesting because, Floyd, if someone had walked into one of your, you know, like a day when you're, it's like Mecca to them, and they walk in, you'd be like, come on in and watch what we do. This is just how we roll. I mean, if there's room for them in your office.
I did. And I did have actors come into my office at Disney because.
What do you mean?
Real actors. Like real people. I mean,
well,
real...
I figured they would be humans.
One guy who used to stop in on occasion, and I really like this guy because I used to watch his movies. The son of actor Robert Keith, he went by the name Brian Keith.
Oh, Brian Keith!
Wow.
He was Robert Jr., but he never used Robert. He was known on screen as Brian Keith, and he did a number of movies for Disney. And Brian used to wander into my office and say, "What are you drawing?" And I would show him the stuff I was doing, and so and back in the 50s it would be Tim Considine and David Stollery when they were still boys, you know. I'm still friends with David today. I haven't seen Tim in years, but David Stollery, I see him often, and he's no longer acting, but now he designs automobiles or something. But he's a cool guy. But like I said, I knew him when he was like 12 or something. You know, they were all kids. Yeah. So I always welcome anybody who wanted to come in, and they were all. Everybody was really cool and friendly and mellow. And Annette Funicello, who was always around, and she was very sweet. And that was the one thing about Annette. She was very definitely just the sweetest young woman you could ever. Mm-hmm. ever meet.
Mm-hmm.
And she was that way all of her life. When she was a kid all the way up to, sadly, her passing recently, she was just the sweetest, kindest woman I had known. It was almost as though she was just perfect for Disney. Because Disney was just it was the sweet studio.
Drawn to order.
You know. And of course now our starlets don't fare too well.
Yeah.
I've always likened it to the treatment of young goddesses, and sometimes in foreign countries they'll elevate a prepubescent young lady to goddess status, and then as soon as she becomes a woman they drop her on her butt and she's out. And it's just like she was a deity and now she's trash to us, so just let her go.
Trash,
let's get a new deity. Oh yay.
That's
that girl who's in the gutter is going, yesterday I was a goddess, can we go back to that? And people are like,
no, honey, I've got your boobies.
It's we got
a new goddess, sorry. Sorry, you're yesterday's news.
Yeah, see, I think interestingly enough, as all the scandal in the news lately, I was telling Paul, it feels like for the first time, Miley's kind of got it right because she knows to hit the scene angry, to flip-flop everybody's, make your attention-getting statement. You come out with raw sexuality, get everybody's attention, everybody's judgment, which means everybody knows your name again for the first time.
That's
and then
right.
She can mellow out as she gets older. Well, and she'll be in the spotlight forever. Then
I also think Showbiz Family, you know, before she got there was kind of important. You know, like she had a dad who sort of had his up and downs and sort of...
Yeah, her achy breaky dad.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
But, you know, some kids get, you know, they go, they have a company, they have a cross-country search for the new talent. Some kid from Podunk is in there. They're going to school one day and dealing with mom and dad at home. And now suddenly they're out here, the rules are off, and woohoo, party,
and they're
party.
Out of control. We've seen it happen.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, sometimes mom and dad forget that there are rules, and mom and dad misbehave when they get to L.A.
Uh-oh.
And then the kid is completely lost, which we've also seen happen.
I've seen that happen not only at Disney, but other places, too.
I've seen it happen...
quite frequently.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Firsthand.
So that's why, if you've got a grounding in something you love, and, you know, thank God this has worked out for you and me, Floyd, and for a lot of people we know, like, the work comes first, and the love for the work, and then...
Well, now, see, Floyd has this huge twerking tour coming up, and this white bathing suit that he's
We don't wear. Get to have any fun like that,
no,
you know?
Don't.
I mean, people like us... Again, like I said, we're pretty much boring. Maybe our work is exciting, but, you know, our lives are pretty mundane, you know?
Are they balanced?
People think that my life is exciting because, like, I go to parties and walk on the red carpet and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But
and you get to draw for City of Hope.
Yeah, but to me, the exciting stuff is. I mean, somebody was talking about. Isn't it exciting that you get to go to the premiere of Saving Mr. Banks and other movie premieres? But the thing that excites me about movies, and it always has, is walking on the set that first day,
mm-hmm.
tripping over cables.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's what...
And going, okay, that's where they are.
That's what I find.
That's
what exciting. You know, that's what excites me about motion pictures.
Meeting everybody for the first time.
It's that magic where you show up in the midst of all this junk and cables and lights and wires and this tangled mess. And out of all this chaos, you're going to make a movie
mm-hmm.
that people will watch. Hopefully that they'll watch.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, it is. I mean, filmmaking is chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Even cartoon making is kind of chaotic. And you realize that out of all this, you're going to get something great. I remember the kids at Pixar when I was talking, because I was the old veteran. And I went up to Pixar, and they were still a young studio, and they were going through their trials and turmoil. Things weren't going right on a movie, and it was kind of, you know, melting down, and the poor director was so distraught. And I took him aside, and I said, don't worry. It's always been like this.
Mm-hmm.
This is nothing new, you know? This is why we do this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is why I love filmmaking. This is why I love animation. This is why I love... going on to the live-action set.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly love the chaos. And I honestly love being in trouble, where the producer says the film is a disaster. What are we going to do? And at that point, when you say, yeah, we're going to have to fix this.
And yet great ideas happen on the fly.
And then it happens.
Because they have to.
Yeah.
Because they have to, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I think I wrote about this, recently where I had produced this bit for a client, and the client absolutely hated it, just hated everything we did. And I went home that Friday night in tears because I was responsible for this abomination. And my boss called me and said, "Don't worry, we'll fix it." He was cool.
Mm-hmm.
I was all distraught. I was suicidal.
Yeah.
And he said, "Don't worry, you know, we're gonna fix it." And so Monday morning we went back to work, and we fixed it, and the client loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this business is.
Yep.
It's being able to handle a disaster, and say this is part of the game,
mm-hmm.
you know? And if you don't dig it, if you can't handle it, then you should be working in an accounting firm or selling insurance.
Where
because
everything
that's,
is predictable.
Everything
by the
is
numbers.
Mellow, predictable, nothing's ever going to change. But if you're in this business, it's because we love the chaos.
Mm-hmm. It's barnstorming with a pencil.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. It is. It's barnstorming.
Yeah, it is. You know? It is. You're flying by the seat of your pants in a plane that should not be in the air. It is unsound.
Yeah, this and plane is going to crash.
But you're up there. And you're wing walking too.
Yeah, we gotta keep the plane from crashing.
Yeah,
and we're out of fuel. Uh-huh. But don't worry, we got some great ideas.
Who's got a sandwich stuffed in there and see what happens?
That's right.
This is a great scene for a song. Yeah, and then the song comes and then the song works and everything's great.
That's right. That's
and if it was easy, everybody would do it.
That's very true. You're right.
Only we can do it.
Yeah, only we're crazy enough to do it.
Well, I'm glad you're doing it.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're both doing it.
Yeah.
Because I love being in a world where you guys are.
Oh, yeah. This business is for the crazy people.
Uh-huh.
And that's us.
When I hear you working on your voices and reading a script and working on a new character, that's great stuff.
Yeah.
It's fun. Oh, Floyd, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, man.
Okay, do we break for commercial now?
Yes.
We break and we go home.
All will
be
back
in
just a moment.
Merry Christmas.
On your ear.
Happy holidays. Thank you for coming. I hope you have a great... Are you doing anything fun over the holidays?
I hope not.
Okay.
I hope not.
He needs a break.
I've had too much fun all year.
All right.
I'm taking a break from fun.
You and me both, my friend.
It's the beginning of a new year, too. So.
Yes, that's right.
2014.
2014.
The year that was better than 2013.
The year where everything collapses.
It was a pretty good, amazing year.
It was amazing. It was a good year.
It was
challenging in a lot of ways. Sad in some ways. But, good. Good
stuff. But it's going to be good.
Yeah.
It's going to be okay.
We keep telling ourselves that.
Yeah, because we have to, or else we're not going to go into 2014.
Exactly. We're not going to be able to face 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, I've got to put the sticker on my car.
Yeah.
You know what? I got to get a smog check and get a sticker from my car.
Oh, yeah.
Before 2014. Like, we should have done it
which,
2 weeks ago.
Which one? The Jeep?
Uh-huh.
Oh, we better do that. We don't want to be...
I'll take it tomorrow.
Okay.
While you're having your tooth yanked.
Yeah, they will tow your car if you don't have your sticker.
Oh, they're doing that now? They're not just taking it?
Oh, I got my car towed.
Stop
I was this is a funny story. I was in Playa del Rey. Why did I go to Playa del Rey?
I don't know.
I went to
there.
Playa del Rey because I like the beach. Okay. And I parked my car and I hadn't gotten the sticker for my license plate.
Oh no.
And they came and they towed my car away. I was at Playa del Rey. I'm at Playa
del Rey.
It's
nice there.
But it was
clearly they have nothing else to do.
It was a beautiful day, but I suddenly realized I'm in Playa del Rey and my car is gone. So.
And that's not... I am not walking distance from my house right now.
So let me see. And I thought, well, I'm going to have to... I thought I would walk to a rental car place. I said, I'll just walk to find a rental car place and rent a car and drive it home. And it was Saturday. And for some reason, the rental car places close.
Like at 12?
At 12 on Saturday.
Wow.
And I got there, and they were closed. And I said, oh, shucks.
Mm-hmm. Is that what you said? Oh, shucks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm in Playa del Rey. I'm in Playa del Rey with no car and the rental car. I guess I should have looked for a dealership and just bought a car next, you know. Mm. Couldn't rent one. I guess I'll have to buy one.
Well, at least it would have fresh plates.
I'll take that blue one over there.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll take the Lotus. Thank you.
You know, the funny thing was I was very mellow about that disaster. You know, I thought, you know, at one time in my life I would be very upset. I'd be angry. I would be going through all kinds of stuff. And I realized, yeah, you know, they towed my car and I can't get home. But it's a nice day. It's a beautiful, sunshiny day in Southern California. What's not to like, you know? So I'm walking down the beach, you know? How bad could that be?
Mm-hmm.
But I got home eventually. My sister-in-law, Stephanie, came and picked me up. Stephanie is the sister of my wife. She's the crazy sister.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like her already.
You like her already? Yes.
Absolutely. Stephanie
is my wife is kind of crazy, but her sister is crazier.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. On the day before our wedding, she pulled me aside and said, why are you marrying my sister?
Okay.
When I'm so much better.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How'd that feel? Probably pretty powerful.
Pretty wacky.
Yeah. Well.
I kind of admired her for being able to say that.
A little bold.
Yeah, yes.
A little bold.
I thought it was pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know. I said, so I guess that's the way sisters are.
You said, good looking I didn't have any
sisters, so I don't know the sister dynamic thing. So
sisters are wacky.
Yeah, I didn't have any, so I thought, well, that's pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that explains Frozen, you know, the two sister,
there you go.
The two sister thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. It's fun.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Anyway,
we out.
We're gonna
Floyd Norman, powerhouse.
This has been another episode of Radio Rashi. If you've enjoyed this episode, let everyone know by leaving a review in the iTunes Store. It's a great way to help others find us. You can also leave comments on RadioRashi.com, Facebook.com/RadioRashi, or follow us on Twitter @RadioRashi or @Paul_Dini to leave us questions. Thanks for listening, and tell your friends.